Good evening for April 20th, 2017. This is James McCanny with my Science Hour. I'm going to discuss tonight, this is part one, Water Filtration 101 is the title. Now, I've given talks before about water. In fact, it's something I happen to know quite a bit about. I've been selling water filtration products for about 20 years. I actually have my own line of water filtration products now. They're the best on the planet. There's really nothing that even compares. And this has come about because of my knowledge of water and also association with laboratories, testing laboratories, development laboratories, and groups of people who are very also tuned to the issues dealing with water. Chemists, experts in their field with a combined group of talent. And the whole issue of filtration of water, it's greatly, greatly misunderstood, and it's complicated by the fact that there's a lot of advertising going on by people who want to sell you something. But, well, we'll see during this lecture. I've already given talks two, and then you have access to listen to these also. There are a two-part series that I did actually in 2016, right after the Flint, Michigan water fiasco, called Living in a Toxic World, Part 1 and 2. Part 1 was the science of water pollution, understanding where the pollutants come from, what are the pollutants, and how do they affect the water, what level of toxicity, etc. And then part two was, what can you do? And that was a discussion, really, that gave practical solutions. I also have a book. It's in ebook format called Water, just simply Water, and a lot of people have read that. It's a really an eye-opener as to what's going on in the geopolitical world behind the scenes, who controls water, who owns water, what's been going on for decades to move the world water supply into the same situation as energy, oil, etc., where it's an owned commodity and people are going to have to pay very high prices for the ability to access water. I'll just start by making a few comments that I will elaborate upon during these talks. The first is, we don't have a water shortage problem, we have a water management problem, very simply put. There is a lot of fresh water, it's simply not managed, and also we have a problem with organizations like the Environmental Protection Agency, which I call the Environmental Pollution Agency, because of permitted pollution, allowing companies, permitting them to pollute year after year after year at so-called acceptable levels. And there's no such thing as an acceptable level for pollution of water, the thing that we all need daily, and not only us, but the plants and the animals, and just for good stewardship of the planet. So anyway, that was my first series. Now I'm going to dive into the nuts and bolts of water filtration. So this is really important, because, as I said, there are so many products on the market today and very misunderstood. Nice labels, nice packaging, but in most cases, they do not give you what you are believe that you're buying. So Water Filtration 101, part one, which is this episode, I will be talking about the various types of water filtration processes. Some of them are not actually filtration, but I'll be talking about the good and the bad and the ugly, and then I'll be telling you what I've learned and what I've developed for my own products, and it's, bragging a bit, sure, but you'll understand that these products were not developed in a vacuum. They were developed based on actually giving you clean water. Okay, part two, I'm going to be going into actual products and discussing them, because that's necessary. It's necessary to take individual products and examine them so that you know what you're getting. And what type of, would you call it, just a little bit skewed advertisement that's going on. So you understand the details of advertisement and marketing of water filtration products that really leave you with water that is not filtered and not clean. Okay, so let me start out with just the, let me give you a definition of filtration, first of all. And that's kind of a catch-all word because a lot of these processes really are not filtration. So what we usually generally think of filtration is you take all the bad stuff out and we're left with water, pure water, H2O. But for our bodies or for the bodies of animals or plants, they also need minerals and they get those minerals from water. A plant's primary mechanism for absorbing any of the minerals that it needs, they're dissolved in water. The plant takes on the water, they go in, they absorb the minerals. And if there's something bad in there, say there's nuclear radiation, say there is arsenic, say there is glyphosate, which is a Roundup, basically is the common term, but agricultural herbicides and insecticides, etc., all that is absorbed into the plant. And then when the plant breathes, basically it breathes out water vapor, pure water vapor, and oxygen. Those are the primary substances that leave a plant during their process of respiration, just like you breathe. Everything else is left in the plant. The same for animals. The animals are like humans. They have internal organs that filter the toxins, etc., in their system. And so they're left with a toxic filtration system in their body. So all of these toxins, when they eat the plants that are filled with toxin, they're absorbed and they're cumulative. This is the thing that's important to understand in the food chain. So when, for example, a whale is out in the ocean eating the microorganisms that a whale will eat, shrimp, or on the from that level on down, they're basically consuming tremendous amounts of toxins if the toxins are in the plankton, in the shrimp, in that lower level of the food cycle, in the food chain. So you find tuna, which are large, which have high mercury content or high content of radiation, for example, in the Pacific Ocean due to the Fukushima nuclear meltdown disaster. Filtration, our bodies filtrate, our plants, the animals have filtration, and it's cumulative. So in a water filter that's doing its job, it's accumulating these toxins, maintains them in the filter. And one of the problems is, for example, radiation might come in on a dust particle. And your filter filters out that dust particle and therefore the piece of radiation, the atomic or the molecular structure that is associated with severe radiation. And eventually, however, that can break free. The radiation can break free from the dust particle and flow through your water filter if it's not designed to catch something of that type. And there, we're not talking about filtration in the sense of a fine screen trapping something. We're talking, if the filter is properly designed, they will absorb the atoms, the toxic atoms, and hold them. So filtration is one thing, and filters, typically, a lot of them can be cleaned, a lot of them cannot be cleaned, although there are claims to the contrary by the companies that distribute these. But absorption is an essential part of good filtration. In other words, it's a chemical process that removes particles and atomic level structure, atoms, molecules, which are in solution in the water, because the filter itself only goes down to a certain level. In other words, that screening effect where you trap big particles down to a certain level. So there's really two aspects to filtration. So let me just quickly name a number of the more common methods of removing toxins from water. So we have water filtration, and that could be with a gravity water filter. It could be inline, which is a pressurized tube, which gives you a much higher flow rate. It could be reverse osmosis. I'll be talking about all of these in detail. Distillation. There are companies, rather unscrupulous, that just take lake water. They have a tube running into a lake, like Lake Superior, for example, or Lake Michigan. They just have a tube that runs out into the lake. They do a bit of sedimentary filtration and put it in a bottle and sell it to you and put some nice label like that will catch your eye in the convenience store, and you buy that and drink it thinking you're getting pure water when it's not filtered at all. In fact, one of the things I recommend to people is to get a good water filtration system for your house, apartment, whatever, and fill your own water bottle. Stop buying bottled water. The other thing, the thin plastic bottles are a pollutant. There are something like 50 billion of those produced every year. They go into landfills, and you use them once and throw them away, but even worse than that, the thin plastic, that clear plastic, has carcinogenic chemicals in it that leach into the water, especially if you leave the water bottle in the sun, or even worse, if it freezes. That'll drive those chemicals into the water, and you're actually drinking carcinogenic chemicals mixed in with your water. Other people take water that they purify by some mechanism, and they put a powder in it to make it high alkaline. There are other processes that use chemicals to treat the water. They actually add chemicals to kill bacteria, etc., or ultraviolet light. So these are just some of the processes that are commercially available on the market today. And I'll be talking about each one of these and the pros and cons of each method. Many water filtration products use carbon, activated charcoal, and this typically comes from basically medical or food-grade processes that the carbon is produced by companies. I have products that I use carbon. I buy that the carbon from the companies, medical-grade carbon, and a lot of filters use carbon, but carbon is not a catch-all. It does not stop all of the chemicals. In fact, it only stops a few. Like chlorine is, carbon is very good for taking out chlorine. But there are certain other chemicals like fluoride and arsenic, just to name a few, that activated charcoal doesn't touch. And so what you'll find are the cheaper big box store type of filters. You know, they come in a clear case or a clear container, and you pour water in, and it's got a bit of activated charcoal in there. It's really a minimal filter. It's not taking out very much, and it used to be okay when there was just chlorine in the water or some, but it says right on the box, leaves fluoride through. Pass through as if fluoride was good for you, but people are waking up to the fact that fluoride is a highly toxic substance. What they're putting in the city water systems, etc., now they're putting in something called chloramine. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about chloramine and testing for chloramine. Some people believe it's in the same family as chlorine, and it's not. There are very specific tests for chloramine removal from water. And so there's some companies out there that claim they remove chlorine, but are using that claim they're removing chloramine, but using a chlorine test, which is a misnomer. It's really not true. And so you have to understand there's a lot of complications, and I'll be talking about that, the testing of water, the testing of filtration processes, etc. Very complicated area that I've had to become somewhat of a minor specialist, but there again, I defer some of my knowledge to chemists that are employed in the process and the production of water filters, and Now there's something else that a lot of people are becoming very conscious of. It's where these are made. Where are your water filters made? Mine are the only brand that are made in the United States, in our very own factory, under our very own quality control, with testing under our own control, etc. And so the filters that are made, literally all of the other ones are made in foreign countries, unless you're just talking about putting a little bit of activated charcoal in a container. And I wouldn't really, in today's toxic world, I wouldn't call that a filtration system at all. It's a very minimal filtration system. And so anyway, let me go through these once again. Water filtration, you could have ceramics, and that was the original form of water filtration. John Dalton, back in the 1800s in England, was the first person that we really recognize who built a water filtration system. He was actually building lawn ornaments. He was in England, and it was during the 1800s. There was a lot of illness. The Thames River was highly polluted with human waste, and people were sick, including the royalty. And he noticed that water that filtered through his ceramic lawn ornaments could be used in the kitchen, and the people did not get sick. So something was being removed. And, of course, that is the basis of the filtration systems, including my own JMCC GF water filters. That is the first, basically, outer layer. There are other filters that use a black carbon block. And once again, carbon of itself is not a filter. It's an absorber. It absorbs various chemicals, and it, for the most part, it doesn't absorb the vast majority of chemicals. But some people use that in place of the ceramic filter, which is actually a filter, because the ceramic, once it's processed and completed in the factory, it forms a fine, very super fine mesh down to about 0.05 microns, so extremely small mesh for trapping bacteria and cysts and pathogens, dust particles, silt, etc. So that's the first layer in a filtration process. But let me jump into reverse osmosis, and I'm going to categorize it with distillation, because the idea here is to get pure water, pure H2O with nothing else. But do these processes really do that? And the answer is no. And it's, once again, a misnomer that people have that reverse osmosis is going to remove everything except water. So what is reverse osmosis? Well, scientists have developed screening mechanisms, so they're extremely fine screens that filter out everything except the water molecules, and they're good at doing this. But the problem is, if the chemical molecular structures are smaller than water, which includes some of the most carcinogenic materials on the planet, it will also pass through the reverse osmosis screen. And how do they do this? Well, they take water, and this is one of the primary methods of removing salt, one of the only known methods of removing salt from seawater is reverse osmosis. And this may change in the near future. By the time some people listen to this, the entire world of removing salt from seawater will possibly change. In fact, I have some of my own research working in this area, so there's a lot of work going on. I believe that very soon we're going to have solutions to removing salt from seawater. But at this point, the only viable commercial method is using reverse osmosis. So you're left with water that is without the minerals. Now, is that good? Some people think that drinking demineralized water is good. And that's what happens with distillation also. When you distill or evaporate water, the water vapor leaves, but any chemical molecule, any molecule that has a vaporization point that is less than water, in other words, the temperature that it boils at is less than the boiling point of water, guess what? That's in your distilled water. It's going into your distilled water. And let's take another example of distillation. When you look at a big refinery that's distilling petroleum, and they're cracking the big petroleum petrol molecules, the hydrocarbon molecules, and making, say, gasoline. Well, gasoline has lots of impurities in it. So it's not pure, what we call gasoline, or if you, say, have something like benzene, which is a chemical that comes out also of the refining process. There are various levels. There are laboratory-grade benzene, which is very pure, but you're never going to get 100% pure. And so when we talk about distillation of water, when you go into the grocery store and buy distilled water, it is not what you would call laboratory-grade distillation techniques that are going to get you to pure water. But the problem with both reverse osmosis and distillation is, one of the problems is that it takes the minerals out. You're dealing with completely demineralized water, and I'll talk about that in just a second. The other problem, which is very bad for any type of organism, is that it leaves the water acidic. Now, you don't want to be drinking acidic water. It's very bad. You need a slightly alkaline water. And there again, when we designed the filters, the JMCC GF water filtration systems, the filter elements, etc., they let the minerals pass through, the beneficial minerals, and so you're left with a water that's slightly alkaline, and that's what your body needs. There are people who put high alkaline levels in their water and they drink it every day. That's, to my way of thinking, not a good idea. Now, I've talked to doctors about this. I have my own opinions, but the best opinion I have received is from a doctor who explained it like this. Our bodies were never historically accustomed to drinking high alkaline water. And the end result is that you should be drinking a water with alkalinity that is about the same as what your body is, just slightly alkaline, not excessive. Now, if you have cancer, or if you have fungus in your body, which is characteristic of cancer, then you might want to go on a high alkaline diet. I'm not a doctor. I'm not able to recommend this. But for the average person, a high alkaline water is not good for you. That's the recommendation I've gotten. The other thing I've gotten from a nurse who has spent her entire career in all fields of medicine is that when you start introducing something like, say, high alkaline water, your body forgets how to maintain its alkaline level. It says, I don't have to produce any more alkaline, I don't have to produce anything that makes my body alkaline because I'm already highly alkaline. So your body gets lazy and stops producing the alkaline elements in your body that keep you at a certain alkaline state. And so that's one of the legitimate reasons also for not taking medications all the time, because your body is going to become accustomed to those and the normal healing process of the body cease. And so there's a logic to that your body is designed to take care of itself. If you eat well, and you exercise, and you keep your mind active, then you're probably going to be quite healthy into old age. Okay, so back to reverse osmosis and distilled water. Are they good for you? Well, there are some parts of the world where that's economically feasible. It's the only real good way. And then there are people who say, well, they put the good minerals back into the water. But there again, I have to question, where are you getting those minerals from? Are they pure minerals? Or do those contain a lot of the toxins that you're trying to remove from the water in the first place? There again, you have to depend on the source. And if you're not paying a lot of money for laboratory-grade chemicals, you're probably getting a good dose of something else along with it. So this is just something to be aware of, that getting the toxins out of any of these, out of water, out of supplements, etc., is very difficult. And it's costly. And if you're not paying a lot of money for whatever you're buying, you're probably not getting a very pure product. Let's talk a little bit about underground water and water sources in general. Where are you getting your water from? Is it a well? Is it the city water? Is it from rainwater? Is it from a stream? Is it from a lake? Is it from a pond? Are you in an emergency situation where there's flooding? And there could be, say, bacteria from dead animals in the water? Or could it be late in the summer where you have a lot of byproducts that are growing on the animal byproducts, etc.? Or, you know, there's all of these factors. So when you remove sludge or bacteria, whatever it is you're removing from water, is your filter going to attack all of these? If you have city water, the city water today, now in my previous talk and the dealing with the toxic world, I discussed that at that time, this was back in February 2016, right after the Flint, Michigan fiasco, cities started to come forward because they had to make a representation of the quality of their water. And if not, they potentially could be sued and have other legal repercussions for not informing their citizens of the quality or the lack of quality of their water. So almost immediately, nine other cities came out and declared that their water was actually worse than Flint, Michigan. And I was on a radio show as a guest one day, and a guy calls in and he said he used to live in Flint, Michigan. He said the river used to burn there all the time. Now, one of the big cover-ups of the Flint, Michigan case is they were only discussing lead. Well, lead doesn't burn. Lead doesn't float on the surface of a river or burn. So the end result was that there were high levels of toxins in the river to the point where it would literally catch on fire and burn. And so, but Flint, Michigan, once they got caught, were only concentrating on the issue of lead. And I want you all to listen to the previous lecture where I discuss the toxins in water and in city water especially, or even people, say you live in the middle of Kansas and you're out in farming country and you think, well, I've got a deep well, I have very clean water. Well, chances are you have glyphosate in your water, and chances are you probably have naturally occurring pollutants such as arsenic. So I tell people, no matter what your water source, you should be filtering your water. If you look at a map of the United States, you can pull this up on the internet and look for the toxicity level of arsenic, and you'll find there's places like South Texas, there's many other areas of the United States and other countries. Mexico has a tremendous problem with arsenic in the water. So I've had people that come to the United States, buy my filters, the all-in-one. They take arsenic and fluoride out in the filter element itself. There's no add-ons required. They take them back there, and instead of changing them out every 6 or 9 months, they're changing them out every 3 months because they have extremely high levels of arsenic. And so you have to know what your pollution levels are, but for the average person, there is an actual specification rating. How many gallons are these good for? And let's say you live out in a pristine area. There's no pollutants. That this is an ideal case because with radiation in the atmosphere, et cetera, there's hardly any ideal cases left in the world. But say you were in a place where you knew that there was no arsenic or fluoride or glyphosates or other contaminants, that there was no arsenic in your water system, et cetera. You just had pretty clear water with minerals. And so all you needed to do was remove the bulk of the silt, etc., that's in the water, then just a ceramic filter would probably do just fine. And every now and then, you could clean the outside of that ceramic filter, which is another point. Is your filter cleanable? Can you reuse it? And how many times can you clean the outside? Because some people have very water that's highly mineralized. So they have, say, a lot of sulfur. So very quickly, the outside of their filter element becomes contaminated or plugged up, basically, with, say, sulfur or some other contaminant that's in the water, and you have to clean it. The black carbon filters are not cleanable. I've sold all of these in my history. I've sold the black carbon filters. I've sold the ceramic with simply a carbon core. I've sold the ceramics with no core. I've sold the add-on filters, which none of these I sell anymore. Because what now I have now is light years ahead of what anybody else is making. I have a ceramic outer shell with a concentrated mixture, part of which is carbon, but a lot more material in there that absorbs the targeting all of these other chemicals. And that's why we have a chemist on staff to design these filters so that they take out and then they're tested. So that, say, if they're rated for 2,000 gallons, that 98% or above, or a statistic like that, a percentage, is removed for that lifetime of that filter. And after that, then it's going to start to taper off. And this is the absorption part of the filter, not the filtration part, the outer ceramic shell. So you have to understand this dual mechanism, and then there's actually a third layer inside the filter to prevent anything from the filter getting into the water, and that's another very important part of filtration. What is that filter putting into the water? Now, we've been told that there are certain companies that are unscrupulous and are adding chemicals to their filters to prevent them from having mold grow on them. I've seen filters that came in from Korea that have big green blotches all over them, mold growing on them. Well, my filters, I take care of that with a solution of silver. Silver is in the filter, and it prevents the bacteria from growing. And it'll do that if you have a filter in 10 years, one of my filters, it will not grow bacteria. Even if it sits around wet in a corner, it will not grow bacteria. But the other ones will start to grow. It looks like a little big bug sitting on the side of the filter element. So at any rate, but the black carbon, for example, there's no way to impregnate the black carbon filter with something that'll prevent mold. So that's one of the big drawbacks. I'll be getting into those a little bit later. But lately, a lot of companies have come along, new companies on the market, using black carbon filters, and they're machined out of a block of carbon. It's a very inexpensive way to make I wouldn't even call them filters, they're absorbers. There was a point about a decade ago when I actually had some of these in my product line, and I took them to a flooding situation in the field, wanted to test them, and put the flooding water into the filters and let them drain, and after the first two loads of water, they plugged up and they were not cleanable. So that's when I stopped selling anything. That's when I stopped having anything to do with black carbon filters. There were some other issues also, but the ceramics, you could clean them and clean them and clean them over and over again. But also I developed some products to deal with pre-filtering water in severe flooding situations like that. But the ceramic outer shell filters are cleanable, and that's why I've remained with those on my own product line and have nothing to do anymore with the black carbon filters because they do not work in emergency situations. They'll work once, but not two or three or four times. And once they're rough, and once they become saturated with the silt, they plug up and they really, you can't clean them. So to summarize, what we find on the market today are ceramic water filter products with a ceramic outer shell. Some of them have a carbon core and are very limited in the chemicals that they remove. They require add-on filters for fluoride and arsenic, and really do not filter out the level of toxins that we have in the water today. Mine are the only ones that really target the long list of toxins that are available in the that come at you in the water today, and all in one single filter element. But the ceramic filters were the original filters. I still believe they're the best filter in terms of filtration. But there's also a problem. A lot of these today are made in other countries. Let's just put it that way. There's no quality control. And let's take a look at what a water filter has to do. It has to be uniform throughout the entire outer shell. If there's an inconsistency where it attaches to the base, or if there's an inconsistency somewhere along that ceramic shell, then all the water is going to pass through there, and it's not going to filter water at all. And people are going to be fooled. They're going to think they're getting filtered water, and they're really not. And in the foreign countries, I'll be honest with you, there's just no quality control. And so this is something I've learned by having our own factory, that making a water filter, it looks easy. It looks like, you know, you go down to the lawn ornament store and you buy a lawn ornament, or these people that paint, you know, ceramic figures, you know, they're figures of dogs and cats and statues of people, etc., and they paint them. That's a ceramic. It's a very similar type of ceramic. But the ceramic that goes into a filter is extremely, extremely highly processed. And the mechanism for forming it into the filter shape and then processing it is highly, highly controlled. And so if you're just slapping these things out like Johnny B. Goode, you're going to have a lot of inconsistencies, and people are not going to be getting filtered water. And that's just only the outer stage. So then let's look at the other types, reverse osmosis. I've spoken about them. Distillation, UV, I haven't mentioned, but ultraviolet is used in a lot of water filter processes to kill any cysts, bacteria, any living, anything that's living, anything organic that would be crawling around or swimming around in your water. And that's actually a viable mechanism. I have some filters. Some of my big industrial filters use ultraviolet light. So it's a very viable form in conjunction with a sediment removal process. But those are industrial grade. There are processes that add chemicals to the water. I would not recommend those, or like these tablets that people take on a trip. They, survival or whatever, and they put a tablet into water. I personally don't recommend those at all. For example, my line of travel filters use the same GF technology in the mini filter. Filters up to 1,000 refillings with one filter element, or 2,000 in the 1 liter size. These are 1 and 2 liter filters, come with extra sealable containers. So there are ways of dealing with travel water filtration in a very economical and lightweight travel type of situation. But my personal opinion, don't put chemicals into your water. Then there's the fiberglass screen. And now these you might buy at the home center where you want to filter water for, say, out on the farm, and you're just filtering water to fill a tank and maybe the livestock are feeding or something like that. But there's that type of filter, but that is not meant for home use. Then there's the, like I say, the big box store filters. It's like a clear plastic case. You put some carbon-activated charcoal in a little container. You pour your water through that. Really does a minimal amount of removal of toxins. I would not recommend that at all. Then there are something that are sold on the market. I don't agree with them. We've had them tested, and I refuse to sell them. They're shower filters. It's a little canister. It goes up on your shower, and they're basically a carbon-based absorber in there, absorber material. But the problem is the water in a shower passes through too quickly. There's not enough contact time, and they really do not filter the water. They don't really take out all of the things that you need taken out, which brings me to the point of whole house filters. Now, I've sold whole house filters in the past. I used to sell one that I've taken it off the product line. It was a whole house filter for the removal of chlorine, and it had a carbon-based medium in the tank that you would replace every now and then. And I stopped selling it because, really, if you're going to be serious about a whole house filter, something that seriously removes all of the toxins, including the arsenic and the fluoride and the glyphosates and the chloramines and the chlorides and all of that, because you're in the shower, you've got hot water coming on your body, and your skin is the biggest absorbing cell in your body. Everything that touches your skin will come through your skin and into your system. And so I believe personally in a whole house system, but now what I have are industrial grade filter systems that remove up to the same levels as my gravity water filter and other smaller inline water filter systems. And if you put one of these in your house, you do not need filtration at the sinks, at the shower, at anything else. All of the contaminants are removed at the what we call point of entry. And so you have the point of use, the POU, and the POI, point of entry. So the whole house filters that I'm selling now have a very high flow rate, up to 36 gallons a minute. And I guarantee you, I don't care how big a house you have, you're not going to be using that much water. And then, of course, people like that when they wash clothes, because now they're not washing their clothes in chlorine, which is very destructive. One of the biggest causes of destruction of your clothes is chlorine in the water. So it removes that, removes all the other chemicals, and that's the only filter you need in your house. So a lot of new construction, or people even with old construction, might consider a real whole house filter. And the old kind that I sold that just removed the chlorine, I mean, you can buy those down at the hardware store. You can buy those any place. But frankly, I wouldn't waste my money putting one in. If you want a whole house filter, get a real whole house filter that removes everything. And then you don't have to worry about the sinks and the shower and the laundry, etc. So there's the whole house option. There's one more type of filter I want to mention, or I should say filtration process. Many people today are worried about nuclear radiation, and there's a lot of misnomers about this in the field, in the market today. Nuclear radiation can come in through groundwater. It can be natural in the ground. It can be, say, you're living near a military base, or say you're down in St. Louis where there was uranium being processed during World War II, and it's still in the groundwater all over for 100 miles around the city where they were processing uranium, or out in California, other locations where they are up in Oregon, Washington State, where they were processing uranium for the war program, or for so-called peaceful nuclear use. Removing radiation is a very difficult thing to do. We classify it in with the heavy metals, which my filters remove also. And so for the complete list of toxins that my filters remove, you have to go to the specification sheet. But there's something about, there's a problem with discussing nuclear radiation and the removal of nuclear radiation from water. Here's the issue. There are people that claim they remove radiation with an inline high-pressure system. Well, what they're removing is the dust. They're removing the particulate matter that the radiation is attached to. Typically, radiation wants to attach to dust particles, and it's very loosely attached. So what they're doing is filtering out the dust particle or whatever. But eventually, that piece of nuclear radiation, that atom of nuclear radiation, is going to break free, and it could be a chunk of matter, a piece of material, is going to break free and flow through the filter and eventually end up in your water. Plus, it's contaminating your filter. So I personally believe if you have a problem with radiation, it should be taken care of in a pre-filter situation. You don't want that radiation getting into your standard filter. You want to remove it before. And that's a whole nother issue, and the vast majority of people do not have a problem with radiation. But if you do, if you believe you do, then we have to take a look at those specific cases. But that's a more difficult analysis, prognosis, and then solution than the majority of filtration problems that we find in the market today. So as I discussed previously on the other Living in a Toxic World lectures, what we did is we went out into the world of toxic water and we said, what are all the chemicals that we're going to find out here? And we made the very, very long list of them. And then we said, how are we going to target all of these? And that's what we did. And that's how we came up with the JMCC GF water filters and the entire product line so that they're consistent across the entire product line, whether they're the high flow, high capacity commercial models for filling tanks on the farm or ranch or for industry, or the small models that you would have in your kitchen or in the bathroom, whether they're the inline pressure on-demand filters or they're the gravity filters, whether they're in the stainless steel canister, etc. And all of these are made in the United States. I cannot stress that enough. So literally, when you're looking at the filtration processes, products that are available on the market today, there's nothing that compares to what I'm selling. There's simply not another, it's in a league by itself. And that's why my biggest selling item is replacement filter elements for other people's systems. Their canister is perfectly good. It might be stainless steel. There's some plastic ones on the market. If it's a clear plastic container, then you don't want to use it for water. Some of the bigger ones on the market, you have to have BPA toxic-free plastics. Like my little personal water filters are made with a plastic that's BPA-free. It's food quality. You can microwave them. You can put them in a dishwasher, and they do just fine. And so those are specific, made for water, so that you can use them over and over again and be confident that you're not getting chemicals leaching out of the plastic into your water. But there are some models of larger scale, large size, 2, 3, 4 gallon size water filters that are clear. And if you see those, avoid those. They leach water or leach chemicals into the water, especially if they're in the sun. That's very bad. Or if they're in a warm, dry environment, etc., they can also leach chemicals into the sun. But in general, just avoid any large water filter containers that are clear plastic. You'll notice that mine, what I call the White Whopper, is once again, a food-grade approved plastic that, in terms of holding water, is as good as stainless steel. When I talk about made in the USA, I have a little story that I tell that one time I received a call. We at the factory received a call, and it was a company in India. The company that had ordered certain water filters made in India, they were of the black carbon variety, did not fulfill an order. They didn't pay for their order, and so this company was looking around for somebody to buy them. And actually, I had sold these type of filters in the past, and I really was not interested. But these are filters that sell for $50 to $100, and what the company in India wanted was $15, including shipping. So that's just a story I'll tell you. Another story, somewhat of a similar type of story. There are plastic water filters on the market, and they look very complicated. They have many stages and different levels of so-called filtering layers, you might call it. And they retail for $199.95, or in the $200 range, somewhere in there. You can find them on Alibaba for $7 a piece. So this is the kind of thing that's going on in the water filter industry. People are having these made offshore, tremendous markup, and basically people think, well, if they're paying that much money, they must be getting good quality. Another thing that's very common in advertising or deceptive advertising is people will report certain results but not tell you that you have to buy add-on filters to get those results. Now, let me tell you something about add-on filters. I used to sell them myself about a decade ago. It's been a long time that I've had the all-in-one filters that do not require add-on filters. But they don't last very long. They have about a 500-gallon rating. 500 gallons is not very much. If your main filter element has a rating of, say, 2,000 gallons, to match the lifetime of the main filter element, you would have to buy four of the add-on filters to get just arsenic and fluoride removal. So in a lot of cases, the fluoride filters cost as much as the filter element itself. So when you add all of this up over the lifetime of your filter, you're paying five times what you thought you were going to pay for water filtration, and it's not providing you with a good level of extraction of these chemicals. And so once again, you have to look at the fine print, and literally all other products on the market require add-on filters just to remove arsenic and fluoride. And if you look, they're only rated at 500 gallons apiece. So calculate when you sit down, and if you're looking at buying a system with filter elements or replacement filter elements, look at that expense. And what you're going to find out is you're paying hundreds of dollars. In fact, my base end stainless steel system with two filter elements cost less than a set of replacement filter elements for other brands in a lot of cases. And in all cases, if you consider the fact that you have to buy multiple 2, 3, 4, 5 of the add-on filters to get the arsenic fluoride removal, hands down, my whole system with two water filter elements of the JMCC all-in-one, no priming required, no add-on filters required, it's hands down a lot less just for the initial system. And that's why I sell 10 packs of my filter elements. That's my biggest selling item. People buy a 10-pack of filter elements, then they have water filtration far into the future, and they found out that they only have to use one filter element to match what they were doing before with other filters that typically would need two filter elements. Something else that you have to look for is don't buy a filter that requires what they call priming. That is, to get them to work, you have to put a high-pressure hose on the filter and run water backwards through the filter. And what you're doing is you're contaminating the filter before you ever use it. And so the bacteria would be growing on the inside of your filter, and you will never, ever see it because you've just contaminated the filter with unfiltered water, forcing it backwards to get the filter to even work. My filters do not require priming. They don't require add-on filters. You put them in. Takes 2 minutes. You put the first load of water in there, and you're good to go. From that point on, the filters are working. You can dry them out if you have a cabin. I do this all the time. You dry out your filter elements, dry them out good, store them. When you come back, you put them back together and reuse them, use them. And if you have a high, say, mineral content or sulfur or some mineral in your water, you can, with a Scotch-Brite pad, simply rub the outside layer of that ceramic filter. It comes back to a nice creamy white color, and it's good to go again for the lifetime of the filter. So people have used these. In fact, I've given these away to poor people in third world countries and come back 2 or 3 or 4 years later, and they're still using them effectively. because they live in an area where there's not a lot of chemicals in the groundwater or the surface water, whatever they're using. But they've cleaned them so many times that they're actually, you can see how much they've worn them down because of cleaning them over and over again. But they're still good. They still work. They still consistently through the entire ceramic casing, they are consistent and continue to filter water. And so that's been a very big blessing for me to give away a water filter and then come back years and years later and see the people still using it. And then at that point, of course, I give them another filter element or two. But poor people, and, you know, so they have clean water at really no expense. Something else that you have to watch out for when you're buying a water filter is what we call the 50-gallon test, the 5,000-gallon claim. And here's what happens. They do a test, and it's rated for 50 gallons, and then make a claim that the filter will last for 5,000 gallons or some enormous number. But if you look at the fine print in the testing, and testing is something I'll be talking a lot about in part two, which is be available to the public also, I'll be discussing testing, which is a very big part of making filters and providing a very high quality product. I've heard other claims, for example, removes red food dye. Now, I've heard this one, and first of all, red food dye is not a toxic substance. The so-called claim doesn't claim they can remove green food dye or yellow food dye or any other food color. Red food dye is not toxic. It's that's why it's used in food. So it's really a false claim, and it just turns out that carbon is an absorber of red food dye. It's just a quirk of the material. And so it's really one of those false claims that people use to try and impress you. But there again, it's just a claim that's a vacuous claim. So remember to listen to part one and two of this series, the Living in a Toxic World series, part one and two. Also read the book Water. And check out part two of this particular series, Water Filtration. This was Water Filtration 101. The next episode will be Water Filtration 102, where I discuss testing and a lot of other specifics regarding water filtration. To my way of thinking, there's nothing more important than clean water for plants, for animals, for ourselves, and for the environment. As I said before, we don't have a water shortage problem, we have a water management problem. And this is something I'll be discussing a lot in the future, and have dedicated a good portion of my life to providing clean water for you. Good night. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.